A nation that truly has no clue, they don't know what they're doing.
Welcome one, welcome all, and welcome back to the Paranormal Patriot. Thank you for joining me this week. Thank you for your patience as I went through one of the hardest things I've ever had to go through in my life. Actually, I think it probably was the hardest thing I've ever gone through. I've said it numerous times before on this show. I'll continue to say it. I will put the listeners of this show up against any other podcast, any other radio personality show. The listeners of this show are just, they're overwhelming to me. The amount of condolences, the amount of prayers, and just, Tom, we're thinking of you, was overwhelming. I promised myself I wouldn't cry during this show, and I'm gonna tell you right now, it's gonna be hard. But the amount of people that just sent their good thoughts, sent their messages of prayers and my condolences, if you need anything, let me know, it was just literally overwhelming, but in a good way. The listeners of this show, when I talk about this show quite a bit, I always tell the people I'm talking to, I don't have listeners. We're a family. And this whole situation with my mother and what happened to her, it just brought it to the forefront. We are a family here. Call us parapatriots. I don't care what you call us. We are an absolute family. I thought long and hard about what to do on this show. There was no way, absolutely no way, I could do a show last week. My mother passed away Tuesday, and Friday I was an absolute wreck. There was no way I was doing a show. To me, if you've ever lost a mother or father, I don't know, but to me, it still doesn't feel real. I still pick up that phone to call her on the way home from work and just see how she's doing, and I'm like, she's not going to answer. It's hard. I wanted to do a show to kind of in memory of her, and I thought, you know, I could talk about my mom all day, all show long. But really, who would understand it? If you didn't know her, you didn't know the amazing woman that she was. And, you know, I'm going to do politics on this show. I'm going to talk about what's going on. Because when my mom and I got together and when I was talking to her on the phone, inevitably, she would turn that conversation. It could be about the Easter Bunny. And somehow she would turn that conversation to politics. She loved to talk politics with me. We think the same. And she just loved the fact that she could talk. Because for the last pretty much year, she really couldn't do anything but read the paper and watch TV and get on the internet and find out what's going on. And she knew, no offense to my other brothers and sisters, but she knew that they couldn't get into the depth of the conversations that her and I did. I will take those to my grave as treasures. But I'm telling you, I've never known pain like this. I'm almost 50 years old. I'll be 50 in November. My father's mother and father, my grandparents on my father's side, died when I was 7 and 8 years old, I believe. So, yeah, I miss them. But it really never hit me. My grandfather on my mother's side, my mother's dad, he died when I was, I think, in my 30s. And that was tough because I was there when he died. And it was tough. You know, I still miss them. I still miss all of the relatives that have passed on. But I'm almost 50 years old, and I really haven't had really, really close. I've had a great friend, Aaron, pass on. I've had my grandfather pass on. My mother's mom, she died when my mother was 10. She died of the same cancer that my mother died of. So I never even met my grandma Maxine. The thing about my mother's death was it was sudden, but it wasn't. Just to give you a backstory of what she went through. Everybody knows that my wife has cancer. She was diagnosed in 2017. My mother was diagnosed with cancer in 2017. And it was vulva cancer. Basically, the woman's parts cancer. And she had surgery, and they told her, we got it all. You're good to go. Well, a year later, she started getting a lump again, and they went in, and this was in 2019, and took that lump out and said, nope, we got it all, you're good. Well, in 2020, in January, they found numerous lumps, and they said, okay, we are basically removing, well, they told her that they're basically going to remove all her woman parts and any part of her bowel that the cancer could have spread to. So that meant she had to have a colostomy bag, and it was a decision for her, and it was a decision for us that she decided to go through with it because she said, I want to watch my grandkids and my great-grandkids grow up. So she decided to have this major, major surgery, knowing full and well that she was going to have months and months of recovery, but she was willing to accept that. So she had the surgery in January of 2020, and she actually started feeling pretty good. And then, right before she was due to go home, she developed an infection. That infection never left her. She stayed in the hospital till, I believe, the whole month of February. They finally sent her home and sent her to rehab, and they could not get that infection to go away, and they were culturing it and couldn't figure out why are these antibiotics not working on this infection? Couldn't figure it out. So then they decided, okay, we're going to do a scan. Hopefully we got all the margins for the cancer and got the margins right and there's no more cancer. They couldn't find any cancer. She finally came home and was home for a while. And over Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, she bent down to put a pie in the oven because that's one thing my mom did was cooked like a fiend. I mean, one of the most important thing to her were holidays and family get-togethers. She would single-handedly, I have two brothers and two sisters. We're all married. We all have multiple kids. We have a huge extended family. And my mom and dad's house on holidays and during the summer would be loaded with my brothers, my sisters, and my mother would cook all the food. She lived to have her family together, lived for us to be just having a great time, and we did. When we get together, we have such a great time. We karaoke, we laugh. I'm not going to say we don't drink, but we do. And we just have a great, great time. Well, she was putting a pie in the oven the day before Thanksgiving, and she had a wound vac on because they wanted to keep, and this is November, everybody. Her surgery was in January, and her wound still had not healed. She had a wound vac on, and she bent over to put the pie in the oven, and gushing blood from her incision. I mean, to the point that my sister, after the ambulance came, she was passing out. She was losing so much blood. She was falling unconscious. My sister said it looked like a murder scene. And God bless you, Jill, for cleaning that mess up. But she was in the hospital. And she was in the hospital for Thanksgiving. She was in the hospital for Christmas. Because they couldn't, they attributed it to the infection. And they kept doing scans, they kept doing tests, and everything came back normal. She finally just said, look, I'm going home. I'm tired of this. I'm going home. She came home on New Year's Eve, and we were just mom's back. My mother is the glue of the family. She was the matriarch of the family. And here's where the tears might come in. She came home, and we're just like, oh, that's great. And she just went in for a follow-up visit 2 weeks later. And the doctor came in and said, Julie, we can't help you. This infection, we can't cure it. Your cancer's back, and it's extremely aggressive. It's spread all over. And they gave her 6 months to live. And we were shocked. All of the tests, all of the scans, how did they miss the cancer? How? And the response we got was, well, cancer and infection shines the same way. Somebody dropped the ball. I mean, honestly, somebody dropped the ball because they were in there. They could see. They could see what was going on with her, inside of her. They could have seen that these are not, this is not an infection. These are cancer cells. So she came home essentially to die in, 6 months. You know, hopefully we get her to 4th of July. She loved, my brother has this huge 4th of July party, and she loved going there. We were like, let's get her to 4th of July. Let's get her to 4th of July. And I was going over there every weekend. And you could tell. I mean, I hadn't seen my mom for quite a bit because she was in the hospital. And here in Michigan, because of our illustrious fucking governor, you couldn't go in the hospital. So my mother got to spend her last Thanksgiving and her last Christmas alone in the hospital. And that will haunt me for the remainder of my days. That is no way anyone should have to spend their last Thanksgiving and Christmas, especially that woman who loved having her family around. And she was alone. And when she got home, I talked to her about it. She's like, yeah, they don't do anything at the hospital. Here you go. Here's your meal. Merry Christmas. That's it. And she finally said, I'm coming home. I can't do this anymore. And she checked herself out of the hospital. She wanted to be home for at least one holiday. And she got home, and I'd go over there, and again, you could tell she was tired. You could tell she was in a lot of pain. She'd take these morphine tablets all the time, enough to take the edge off of the pain, but she was still coherent. She was still able to talk, and I had some great, great talks with my mother. And, you know, one of the questions I asked is, I said, do you have any regrets? And she said, you know, not really. I have 5 beautiful kids who are all successful, who have not been in trouble, and who are very respected. I asked her, I said, is there anything on your bucket list that you want to do? And she says, no. I had a family. I love my family. I lived a good life. And then she stopped, and she says, you know, I do have one regret. That regret is I wish I would have instilled the love of God and Jesus in my kids more. And that hurt. No offense, Mom, but gosh, that hurts because I'm on the show every week talking about how pissed off I am at God. And right now, I am. There is no reason he needed to take my mom yet. There's no reason he needs to give my wife cancer. When you've got these pedophiles, when you've got these politicians roaming around, healthy as can be, who determines, how does he determine who lives and who dies? But anyway, I'd go up there every weekend, and I was up there Saturday, and she was okay. We watched Cocoon together, and if for those of you old enough to remember, Cocoon is the story or the movie, Wilford Brimley was in it, and it was a story about aliens, and these old men were swimming in a pool with these alien pods in there, and all of a sudden they got vigor and life back. My 17 and my 11-year-old kids were sitting there just enthralled with this movie, and we were watching the movie, and we were just loving it. And she said, this is what I love. just being around everybody. And she didn't seem too bad. I text her Sunday, the day after. How you doing, Mom? I'm okay. I'm hurting a little, but I can do it. On Sunday, I found out that she was having trouble eating, that she would eat and get really nauseous, but they were attributing that to the amount of morphine she had to take to stay, you know, semi-pain-free. I texted her Monday. Said, Mom, how you doing? Called her. Said, Mom, how you doing? She said, I'm not doing too bad today. I actually feel pretty good. And I'm like, great. That's awesome, Mom. And then Tuesday morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm telling you, when you're in this situation, when that phone rings at 4 o'clock, your heart drops. Now, this particular Tuesday, I was sleeping on the front room floor on a mattress because I was still having to be quarantined from my wife because of her latest radiation treatment. I had my phone on the floor next to me, and the phone rang, and I heard it, and I'm like, the first thought that came into my head was, oh no. I flipped the phone up, or turned the phone, and it was my brother. And I'm like, oh shit. I pick it up. I'm like, what is going on? He's like, hey, Mom's bleeding really bad again. She's in ER. The doctor said the cancer is eroding the artery, and we need to be up there. I'm like, what do you mean we need to be up there? Is this it? And he says, yeah. Yeah, this is the end. I'm like, no, there's no way. He says, you need to get up here. So that was at 4:22 on Tuesday morning. I was backing out of my driveway at 4:31. I brushed my teeth. I dressed. I don't even know how I did it. I remember my wife waking up going, what is going on? I said, I just got a call from Chris. Apparently, Mom's bleeding again. And the doctor said everybody needs to be there. She's not going to make it through the day. And she's like, no, that's not even possible. And I said, I know. And part of me, the whole way there, see, I live an hour and 15 minutes from my parents, an hour and 35 minutes from the hospital she was at. And that whole way there, I kept thinking, she's going to be fine. She'll be fine. She's going to bounce back from this because everybody in my family bounces back. My dad has horrendous heart problems. He has horrible rheumatoid arthritis. He was supposed to die years and years ago. My mother, she was on death's bed for a while. I've always said my family is not the healthiest group, but you know what? We're resilient. And I kept thinking, she's going to be all right. She's going to be all right. She'll be fine. She's going to get through this. She'll spend a couple days in the hospital, and then she'll be back home. Well, we got to the hospital, and by the luck of God, that Monday, this is Tuesday morning, that Monday, Covenant Hospital in Saginaw, Michigan, had eased their COVID restrictions to where if it's end of life, you can have the family in there. So keep in mind, this emergency room is the size of maybe a little bit bigger than the bathroom in an airplane. I walk in, and I picked up my brother. I stopped at my brother's because we couldn't get a hold of my oldest brother, and I rang in the doorbell, trying to get a hold of him at his house, and he answers the door. He's like, what is going on? I'm like, we need to go. Mom's not doing well. So him and I went together, and we get there, and they announced to the room. They called the room and said, hey, your brothers are here, because my brother and two sisters and my dad were there. And you can only fit three people in that room at a time. So my brother and I go in there, and you can tell she's in pain. She's laying on her left side because the incision's on her right side. I'm like, hey, Mom, how you doing? She's like, I'm doing fine. I'm okay. And I'm like, don't lie to me, Mom. She said, I'm hurting. And, you know, we sat there for 10, 15 minutes just talking, you know, just, you know, I could tell she was hurting. She really never opened her eyes. But then my brother left, and my two sisters came in with me. And we're sitting there, and she just kind of rolls over to her right a little bit. And we called it the pageant wave. She just kind of waves her hand in the air and says, "All right, everybody, bye." I'm like, "I'm not going anywhere." She's like, no, this is it for me. I'm ready to go." And I'm like, "You're not going anywhere, Mom. You got a lot of time left." She goes, "No, I can feel me slipping. This is time. I just want you to know I love you and I'm proud of you." Now, something about my mom is she loved, absolutely adored her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren. Every single one. I've got two brothers and two sisters and I. Every single one of us lost a baby. Most of my two sisters and two brothers, their wives, I guess males can't have babies, but their wives miscarried. My son, we delivered and he was dead. And that was the one that my mom got to hold and we got to name and we knew what he would have looked like. And we named him Aiden. And one of the things she told me on the last visit is, "I'm going to be okay. You know, when I go, I can see my mom, who I haven't seen in 60 years. I'm going to see my dad again, and I'm going to see my babies, and I'm going to see Aiden. I'm going to hold him, and I'm going to love him." And she told us, you know, she waved goodbye, I'm going. And she rolled back over. And we're like, "No, Mom, you're not going." She says, I'm going. I just want to go to sleep now. I love you guys." So we're calling my brothers and my dad. And we're like, "Get in here. Something's going on." And right before they came in, she got this huge, huge smile on her face. Without opening her eyes, she says, "There are all my babies." And she never really gained consciousness again. Now, when my grandfather died, when I was there when my grandfather died, I will never forget, he was struggling. He was struggling to breathe, and all of a sudden, he was breathing normally, and he started having tears coming down his eyes, and he got a huge smile on his face. And then he was gone. My mother never really gained consciousness. Let me tell you a funny story. As they finally got her a room, basically to pass on in up in Harrison. It's a connecting hospital to Saginaw Covenant. And they were moving her, and she's like, "What? Wait a minute. This is it? This is it?" And she's like, we're like, What, Mom? She's like, I thought heaven would be better than this. We're like, "You're not dead, Mom." She's like, "I got to go through this again?" So we don't know if she died and came back or if it was just her mind thinking she was dead. But those were the last coherent words out of her mouth. The next couple hours were some of the hardest, easily, not even some of the, they were the hardest hours I've ever had to endure. Watching her literally slip away. She was out of it, which is fine. She wasn't in pain because she literally, from the time she had her surgery in January through February 2nd, 2021, January 20th through February 2nd, 2021, she was in some sort of constant pain. We knew she wasn't in pain because she was just out of it. I mean, she'd open her eyes and she'd look, but she really wasn't looking at you. She was just looking past you. And I don't know if she was looking into heaven, but there was no expression on her face. But the hardest part was, oh, if you've ever watched somebody die, it is the hardest, hardest thing to do. The gasping for air. The knowing you can't do anything to help them. You know, my mother is gasping for air. She's dying right in front of us. I went to the nurse and I said, "You got to do something." My brother went to the nurse and said, "Listen, she's due for pain medicine now. Can you give her a little more just to put her out of her misery?" And the nurse is like, "No, I can't. I can't do that." She said, "She's due for painkillers." So the nurse went in and gave her morphine. And literally, my mother is gasping. She'd stop breathing for a second and then gasp again. It was literally the most horrible thing I've ever seen in my life. And I told my wife and I told my brothers and sisters, if I ever get to that point, put a bullet in my head. I don't want anybody. My mother would not have wanted us to sit there and watch her die like that. My dad is a nervous wreck. My dad is the ever optimist. You know, even in the morning when I got there, oh, mom's going to be fine. Mom's going to be fine. She'll bounce back. This is mom. She always bounces back. And even as she's struggling to breathe, he's like, she'll be fine. And I'm standing there holding her hand. And keep in mind, my mother and father had been married for 57 years. I'm holding her hand and, you know, her blood pressure was so low, her hands were ice cold. And I'm holding and rubbing her hand, and she's struggling for air, and I feel a tap on me. And I turn back, and it's my dad, and he's like, is this it? And I said, Dad, she's dying. She's not coming back. And the nurse came in, and she says, yeah, she's really close. She gave her that morphine. And I don't even think it was 3 minutes left she took her last breath. That, God, that is the hardest thing in the world. Hardest thing in the world to watch your mother die and know that she's gone. This woman gave me life. I grew inside of her womb, and now she's gone. For those of you who have lost your mother, you know what I'm thinking. You know how I'm feeling. You know, I went to work a couple days later, just trying to get some normalcy in my life, because all I could do, I would go to sleep and all I would see is my mother's face, and trying to get some sort of mind off of this. And I had a lady come in and say, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I lost my dad 26 years ago. I cried about him a couple days ago. You're never going to feel okay. It will get better. You'll be able to control it, but there will be just out of the blue, uncontrolled emotions where you miss them. And I do. When she died, we're all in the room. And, you know, of course, legality's got to come into it. We got to sign paperwork and everything. And I'm just thinking, my mother just died. Come on. Give me some time here. But no, you got to fill out paperwork and sign paperwork for cremation or whatever. I get it. As we're leaving the room, I heard my mother's voice in my head, yeah, just saying, hey, Tommy, because that's what she used to call me, Tommy. And I stopped, and I'm like, I just heard mom's voice. And nobody said anything. Well, a couple days later, my brother said, did you hear mom's voice? Because I heard mom's voice and literally stopped. I ran in to the back of my brother as we were leaving that room. Never thought anything of it. He stopped because he heard my mother's voice. My brother, my oldest brother, the oldest in the family, said he saw my mother in his bedroom that night, waving goodbye to him. My nephew saw my mother, waving goodbye, saying, I love you. I don't know what happens after death. I really don't. I can tell you what I think. I think we're energy. I think our spirit is energy, and you cannot dissipate energy. And when we die, the energy just goes. It has been proven that when an individual dies, doesn't matter if it's you, me, my mother, your father, whoever it is, they lose everybody the minute they die. They precisely lose 21 grams. Is that the weight of the spirit leaving your body? Because it's proven everybody loses 21 grams of weight the minute they die. I believe there's an afterlife. I believe our spirit moves on. Maybe that's the great hope. Maybe it's true. I'm going to believe that. I really truly believe that our soul is energy, and you cannot destroy energy. energy just changes form? Is that 21 grams our spirit leaving our body? I think so. But the biggest question is, where does it go after that? Does it go into heaven? Do you see your loved ones? Is your mind playing tricks on you as you're dying? You know, they say that your life flashes before you, right before you die. Could it be that in the deep recesses of your brain are the memories that you hold all the way back to childhood, and as you die, they're released, and you see them as you're dying? Who knows? I don't know, but I think my mom is still out there, and I keep asking for a sign, and, you know, I get these crazy things, and I'm like, okay, mom, you need to be a little bit more obvious, but I need a sign that she's okay. You know, my brother and my nephew are like, yeah, she came to me. I heard her name. I heard her say my name, and she wasn't there anymore. My brother, I ran into him, and he says, yeah, I stopped because I heard mom's voice. Both of my sisters haven't heard or seen anything, and they're getting a little upset. I don't know. This was the hardest thing I've ever had to go through, and it terrifies me that I may have to go through this again with my wife and my dad, and I'm not ready. I can't. I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I really do. Everybody knows how I'm feeling. When I'm at work, it's work. I try my best to put on a work face and do my best, and I'm very good at what I do. But, you know, there were times over this past 2 weeks, this week and a half, that I lost it. I had to go into the back and just let out the loss. It's hard losing a parent. For those of you who have, you know what I'm talking about. It's, I called my mom 3-4 times a week, and I go to pick up the phone on the way home, and there's her number. I still have one of her voicemails on my phone. And it's hard. It really, really is hard. But I've got to tell you, the love, the condolences, and just the support I received from all of my listeners, you have no idea how far that went in helping me cope with this. You know, there's so many people that contact me, said, Tom, I've lost a parent. I know it's hard, and this is what's going to happen. You're going to struggle. You're going to get through this. And somebody telling me I'm going to get through this is what I need to hear, because there were times I'm like, I can't do this. How do I function right now? My mother is gone. The woman who gave me life, the woman who raised me, who made me into the person I am right now. How can I continue? But so many of you are like, it's going to be hard. We're not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to be hard, and you're going to break down at the most inopportune times. So many people said, and it's true, it comes in waves. And it absolutely is true. It does come in waves. And I don't ever want to not stop grieving for her. I will always love her for who she made me. You know, am I the epitome of a child or a son? No. When we were growing up, I had my teenage rebellious years. I left the house when I was 18 because I just couldn't stand living under that roof. And I had kids, and I found myself saying the same damn things my parents said to me. And I'm like, God, why? They were right. And my kids, who are pissed off at me half the time because I'm getting on them, they're going to have kids. And they're going to be like, God, he was right. It's part of growing up. Man, it took me a long time to just face this amount of death this amount of pain and hurt, it's here, and it's tough, but because of you, my listeners, and all the support and all the condolences and all of the good just emails and messages and texts that said, it's tough, Tom. You're going to struggle. You're going to get through this. If you need anybody to talk to, let me know. That meant more to me than you could ever know. I am so blessed to have started this show because I have brothers and sisters who don't have this support. I have support from people I don't even know that have never listened to this show and said, hey, you know, I heard about your mom. I'm sorry, man. If you need anything, let me know. Podcasting is a community, and it's kind of like us, the listeners of this show. We're a family. There's a kind of a podcasting family. Now, granted, I'm on the outside looking in because most of the podcasters out there are pretty liberal, and I'm far from that. But, you know, as my mom always told me, speak your mind. Do not let anyone intimidate you and change your views. And that stuck with me, and that's where I am today. I'm talking to you about views that could get me banned from social media. This show could be shut off. I owe it all to my mom, and I thank her for that because I've instilled that in my kids. You stand up for what you believe in, no matter what it is. If you and I don't agree, fine. As long as you stand up for what you believe in, don't let anyone intimidate you. Don't let anybody silence you. So I guess to sum up this whole portion that I went way too long on, to all my listeners and everybody that sent me the condolences, the positive vibes, the just uplifting messages, emails, texts, thank you. You have no idea how much reading those got me through this. And, you know, I'll never get over this. I know that right now. And a lot of you who have left, who have had parents pass on, have told me you're never going to get over it. It will never, ever leave you. Part of me died that day. Part of me died when I lost my son. Part of me died when my mother left. I'm sure part of me is going to die when my wife and my father leave. It's tough living a life, but we're here for a reason. There's a lot of people that say we chose to be here during this time for whatever reason. I don't know why I would choose to be here at this time. And that's what's going to be talked about on the next segment. We're going to talk about politics because my mother and I used to sit and talk politics all the time, and she was so smart on it, so educated on politics. And she didn't care what people thought. She spoke her mind. But you know what? She instilled it into me. See, my dad, he's just like, I don't care. I don't want to hear it. Just go talk to your mom. But my mom, she instilled in me that you may have your views, but you better listen to somebody else's views just so you can get a perspective. And that's where I think I've got it from, is my mother. And that's something I can carry on, and her legacy in a way will live on in this show because I'll listen to your views. Even if they're different from mine, I can learn something. You can learn something from me. So again, thank you everyone. And to mom, if you're listening, this next segment's for you. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be right back.
Sunshine is kissing my face. You know what they say, you need to have darkness in order to see the light. And love is a strange little creature. Chaser and miss her till one day you find her waiting.
The stuff of nightmares.
Hey everybody, this is Rick Ness, host of the Stuff of Nightmares podcast. Ever since I was a child, I was fascinated by stories of the paranormal and the unknown. Reading about encounters with Bigfoot, the Jersey Devil, UFOs, or even living in a house where spirits roam intrigued me. As an adult, reading true crime stories and watching true crime documentaries made me realize that monsters don't just live in your closet or under your bed. Monsters might just live next door. Come with me on a journey to the unknown and the unthinkable, where the things that people do to each other are just as frightening as the things we can't explain. Every episode, I will delve into the world of the paranormal and lesser-known heinous true crimes. Each story of the unknown will be true first-hand accounts told by the person that had the experience or submitted to me to be read for them. You can listen to the Stuff of Nightmares podcast on the website at www.thestuffofnightmarespodcast.show, your favorite podcast app, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I don't know what to say. Tell me how you feel the same. Cause I don't even know your name. I know I want to. I saw you, there across the room. Doing things beautiful too. And finally my eyes met you. And you came over.
Okay, so like I said, my mother and I used to sit and talk politics. So to honor her, I thought of a couple different ways. And I thought this would be the best way. Because she loved talking politics with me. So what better way to eulogize her in a way than to talk politics and try to find out what the hell is going on in this country. Now, for the last week and a half, I've kind of been out of the loop. I kind of shut myself down. I didn't even go on social media much. Just basically post that my mother has passed and respond as much as I could to some of the people that sent their condolences. But listen, what the hell is going on in this country? This is a nightmare. Joe Biden's at, 53 executive orders right now. Donald Trump was supposed to be the dictator, right? He was supposed to be the dictator who was going to get us into World War III. I don't know, the way I look at it, he brought peace to the world. He's as close as anybody has ever come to normalizing relations in the Middle East. North Korea was a non-issue. ISIS, gone. So now you have Joe Biden, who is basically ruling by executive order. And when Donald Trump did it, and listen, Donald Trump did maybe a fifth, not, I wouldn't even say that, maybe a tenth of the executive orders during this time of his tenure in office. And everybody was up in arms. Oh, he's ruling like a dictator. Joe Biden has done 53 executive orders in 3 weeks as president. You have to ask yourself, I don't care who you voted for, ask yourself, how does this benefit America? How does eliminating the wall being built benefit America? How does eliminating the Keystone Pipeline and eliminating 50,000 jobs in your first week benefit America? And then you got John Kerry coming in and saying, well, these people that lost their jobs, they can go do solar panels. You have to ask yourself, how does this benefit America? Donald Trump made America energy independent because we were producing our own energy to the point that we were shipping oil. We were shipping natural gas out and making money and prospering this nation. That was a bad thing, apparently, because of our quote-unquote carbon footprint, which these politicians have no qualms about flying on their private jet. They have no qualms about having these huge mansions, multiple homes that have electricity just flowing through them at astronomical rates. That doesn't matter. The little people, you and I, we have to reduce our carbon footprint. When you talk about politicians, you're talking about a completely different breed of human. In the America today, that breed of human that is the politician is immune to the Paris Climate Accord. It is immune to having a carbon footprint. The rules that they are implementing on every single one of us via the New Green Deal. And don't think the New Green Deal is not going to come to fruition. It's going to now. The Democrat Party has turned into a socialist party. They want to talk about how the Republicans are just a party of Trumpers. Okay, let's turn it around. The Democrat Party is a party of socialists. I mean, let's be honest. Okay, yeah, the Republican Party is turning into Trumpers. I'm going to go for that because Trumpers are for America first, which is how it should be. As a politician who was elected to an American political position by American citizens, your vote should be construed upon what those citizens in America want you to do. This is squarely at you, Joe Manchin. You, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who were voted in by the citizens of West Virginia. Now, the citizens of West Virginia, let's be honest, they rely on coal. Coal is a fossil fuel. But yet you, who were voted in by the citizens of West Virginia, whose livelihood is the coal mines, you are going to vote against fossil fuels and vote for the New Green Deal. This is not how it works. When someone can give me concrete, definitive proof that man and their fossil fuel usage is manipulating and controlling and devastating this climate, then I might listen. But the actual facts are that we are not manipulating, controlling, destroying our environment. It's cyclical. If you don't think it's that, well, let's be honest with you. You're an idiot because you don't look at history. How in the world, during the Ice Age, did the planet melt? Man wasn't around. Man wasn't creating fossil fuels at that time. It was cyclical. It is our position to the sun. Our sun, I keep telling you, our sun is a huge proponent in our climate future. When you have low sunspot activity, we cool down. Remember global cooling? We're going into another ice age. Then it was global warming. Well, that didn't work. So we're just going to encompass the whole thing by calling it climate change because that can go high or low. And people are buying it. Now, don't get me wrong. I am a big proponent of saving our environment. I'm a huge proponent of stopping the deforestation of the rainforest. I want our oceans clean. But listen, this Keystone Pipeline, let's be honest, you could have it two ways. You could have a pipeline that is unseen, buried under the ground, has grass over it, the wild, you would never know. Or you could transport it via Warren Buffett's rail line and run the risk of spills during loading and unloading, or God forbid, a derailment. There are pipelines in Alaska that have never, ever leaked. But yet we're going to kill 50,000 jobs. The Line 5 in here in Michigan that is buried under the Straits of Michigan, under the Mackinac Bridge, where the Lake Michigan and Lake Huron meet. They want to put a pipeline there, bury it into the bottom of the lake, and then encase it in concrete, basically saying this ain't going to leak. And even if it does leak, it ain't getting through the concrete. Governor Whitmer and President Biden want to kill it. They are all about, listen, the Democrats are turning into, you can call them progressives. And that's what the media calls them. Progressive is a fancy, non-threatening word for socialist. That's all it is. That's all it is. Call it what it is. The Democrats are now a socialist party. They want the government to control every aspect of your life. Listen, there's rumors going around that they want to give everybody $1,000 a week, is it? $2,000 a week? I don't know. It basically equates to $108,000 a year to me. No. I don't want that. Where is that money coming from? You can't buy my vote. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. They will bankrupt this country in order to stay in power. And that should scare every living person listening to this podcast right now. The Democrats are willing to bankrupt this country to stay in power. Because listen, if this country goes bankrupt, do you think those in power are going to suffer? No. Look at Venezuela. Look at China. Look at Cuba. All the politicians are living high off the hog while their citizens are trying to catch a hog and eat it. They can't do that, so they're going to eat their cats and dogs. That's what it's going to come to. And if this isn't proof right here, what I'm about to tell you, that the left hasn't gone crazy, that they haven't just infiltrated our daily lives and just manipulated our brains and our children's brains, I think this is from Louisiana. Harvey Gott should be able to tell me for sure, but it's from Fox 7. And Robert E. Lee Elementary was too offensive, so they decided we're going to change the name. And I'm going to give you the five finalists for the name of the former Robert E. Lee Elementary. So the five finalists are Drew Brees Elementary. Well, he's a great New Orleans Saints quarterback. Bruce Lee Elementary, the martial arts guy. John Cena Elementary School, the wrestler. Adolf Hitler School for Friendship and Tolerance. I don't even know what to say to that. The last one, which I think should be the, you know what, as ridiculous as these other four are, this should be the school name. Schooly McSchoolface. If I had a vote, I'm going to Schooly McSchoolface Elementary. Sorry. I'm not going to Adolf Hitler. I'm not going to Drew Brees. I'm not going to John Cena. I'm not going to Bruce Lee. I'm going to Schooly McSchoolface. The question would be, what would be their mascot? Now, I could picture their mascot as a lot of things, but the only thing that really stands out is a fist with a middle finger standing up. That's the only mascot that could really fit in Schooly McSchoolface. And the Democrats, they'd be fine with it. Because it seems like the Democrats nowadays can get away with anything. Let's talk about MSNBC anchor Nicole Wallace. During a discussion on MSNBC, Nicole Wallace floated the idea of the U.S. government killing American citizens with drone strikes. Wallace brought up the National Terrorism Advisory System bulletin that was released to all law enforcement by the Department of Homeland Security last week. The bulletin, which is in effect until April 30th, warns that the DHS allegedly received information that there is a threat of, and I quote, ideologically motivated violent extremists with objections to the exercise of governmental authority and the presidential transition, as well as other perceived grievances fueled by false narratives. Wallace notes there's a bulletin released to all law enforcement earlier this week that there is, until the end of April, a persistent threat of a domestic extremism. And that is the key. If you are a Trump supporter, you are a domestic terrorist. How do you feel about that? I'm a domestic terrorist. Have you noticed that nowadays the Democrats can say anything they want and not have any ridicule, not be censored in any way, shape, or form? But those of us who are on the other side of the aisle, we're being censored on Facebook, Twitter, Parler's been banned, and, well, hell, well, now we got an MSNBC host stating that it's perfectly okay for the American government to perform drone strikes to kill American citizens. And what American citizens do you think they're going to kill? It ain't going to be the Biden supporters. It ain't going to be the Bernie supporters. it's going to be all the Trump supporters. So essentially the middle of this country and the majority of this country is going to be targeted for drone strikes. The Democrats can say anything they want. If this doesn't reek of socialism, I don't know what does. Well, let's talk about AOC. AOC, we all know and love AOC. Well, shortly after the Capitol siege, she accused Senator Ted Cruz, who is a Republican out of Texas, who is very conservative, a Trump supporter, she accused him of nearly having her murdered during the Capitol riots. Nobody batted an eye. If a Republican, if a conservative, or anybody other than a Democrat would have said anything like this, this ludicrous statement, let me spill out some facts for you. AOC has been quoted numerous times saying that she has been traumatized, feared for her life during the Capitol riots. She was not in the Capitol at that time. Now, I truly understand that there are many adjacent buildings to the Capitol. The building she was in was not raided. She was in no danger. She was never in fear for her life. She's manipulating this. Just like she, all of a sudden, out of the blue, she's been a victim of a sexual assault. She can't name who it is. She won't tell the details. But I've been a victim of a sexual assault. And that's what it felt like when the Capitol was being rioted and raided. This is utter bullshit. I'm sorry. Now, normally my mother didn't like it when I swore, but in this instance, she would be okay. This is bullshit. I'm not saying that she wasn't sexually assaulted because I don't know. If she was, that's horrible. But isn't it convenient that all of a sudden this comes out right after the Capitol riots? Just to add a little bit, oh my gosh, poor AOC. She was sexually assaulted. I can only imagine that she was terrified that she was going to be sexually assaulted again. This is bullshit. Just like the impeachment. The second impeachment. How you can impeach a private citizen. First off, the six Republicans that voted that this second impeachment is constitutional. If they're in your state, Debbie Stabenow, Gary Peters, in my state, Mitt Romney, who is only running as a Republican because he knows that's the only way he can get a seat in Utah. If your constituents voted that it is constitutional as a Republican for Donald Trump to go ahead with this impeachment process, vote him out. Do what you can to vote him out. I know the elections are rigged. I know that we're screwed. I don't know how we're going to defeat this now that it has been set in stone that, hey, the Democrats can cheat and the Democrats can win and we can't do anything about it. Do what you can. Get them out of there. Debbie Stabenow, Gary Peters, if you're listening, doubt you are, but you lost the election. You cheated your way in. I would love somebody to go up to Joe Biden and just say, hey, how does it feel to be the first really illegitimate president? I would love to see that, just to see his response. Hey, man, I don't work for you. But that's taken out of context, according to Facebook. We all know that. So, lastly, I want to talk about our illustrious state of Michigan. Now, we here in Michigan are, and I'm using this term lightly, governed by our governor, and I'm using that term lightly, Gretchen Whitmer. She has no idea what she's doing. She's just following the Democratic protocols and guidelines. She has made Michigan the most controlled, government-controlled state in the union. Our high school kids who need the interaction, She's using quote-unquote science and facts to keep schools closed, to keep our kids from playing sports. The facts don't back it up. The facts remain that the schools are probably the safest place for these kids to be. But yet, she decided to graciously, you know, we were in lockdown from November through February. She graciously allowed restaurants to open to 25%. Ooh, thanks, Governor Whitmer. 25%. But these bars and restaurants have to close at 10 o'clock because after 10 o'clock, apparently people get drunk and the coronavirus just goes after the drunk people. No other state in the union has these rules but here in Michigan. But there was a lot of blowback on that. So what did Governor Whitmer do? I'm not joking when I say this. This is the lunacy we are dealing with in Michigan. To the restaurants and bars that close at 10 o'clock. You can stay open and you can serve free water after 10 o'clock. I am not kidding on that. She said, well, they can stay open, but they have to serve free water. Okay. How many businesses are going to stay open past 10 o'clock just to hand out free water? I mean, this is the lunacy and idiocracy we're dealing with here in Michigan. She has no clue what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. Just to open us up, please look at Florida. They are 42nd out of 50 states in the number of COVID cases. In other words, there are 41 states ahead of them. Florida's been open pretty much this whole time. We're all going to get coronavirus. It's going to happen. We've all had it before. It's called the cold. It's called the flu. It's a different variant of it. Yes, it's going to hurt some people. It's going to unfortunately kill some people. But you know what? So does the flu. It does. It will hurt you. It will kill you. If you're not healthy. If you're healthy, this coronavirus ain't, you know what? Coronavirus went through where I work. I had 4 people out of 7 get coronavirus. I'm thinking I had it. Let me tell you. I'm going to give you a little bit of a insight here. I might have done it before, I don't remember. The owner of the business I work for, his dad was a veterinarian. And he has this horse dewormer, Inferion or something like that. I don't even remember the name. But when the first case of coronavirus went through our shop, he said, he came in with a box and said, here you go. Gave me a box with a picture of a horse on it. I'm like, what is this? Apple flavored. Can't be that bad, right? Says, this is what they use in India and Australia, and in 48 hours, if you have any symptoms, they're gone. So I'm like, screw that. I don't want any symptoms. I'm taking some now. And apples apparently taste a whole lot different to humans than they do to horses. This was not apple flavored. This was, I don't even know. I can't even describe the horrific taste of this paste. You take 250 milliliters, put it on your finger, and put it in your mouth and gag on it. But you know what? I didn't get coronavirus until about 3 weeks later. I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, man, I'm getting congested. That's not a good thing. Woke up an hour and a half later going, oh, man, my throat hurts. That's really not a good thing. Woke up and started getting ready for work. Brushed my teeth. I'm like, uh-oh. I can't taste this toothpaste. Went out, grabbed a piece of, I think it was candy at the time. Somebody left candy. Can't taste it. I'm like, son of a bitch. Grabbed a candle. Put it up to my nose. I can't smell it. Son of a bitch. So I take 500. I'm like, screw this. I ain't getting this. Take 500 milliliters of this horse dewormer. It starts with an I. Just look it up on the internet. It's what they used in India and Australia. take 500 grams of this stuff, put it on my finger, and expect to gag. Guess what? I can't taste it. Well, that's a plus. I'm telling you right now, that was at 6:30 that morning. By lunchtime, I was tasting what I was eating. That stuff works. I'm not saying I didn't have COVID. I think I did. But you know what? This horse dewormer starts with an I. Works like a champ. All right, we're an hour and 5 minutes into the show. I could go on for so much longer, but I think I'm spent emotionally. This has been a hard show. I want to take a quick second and again thank every single one of you for your words of condolence, your words of support, and just being there for me. I honestly think we may not have the biggest audience in the podcasting or radio world, but the audience I have, we're a family. We really are. And with that being said, if you have anything, if you have a problem, if you're going through something, contact me. And if you want to, I can get our audience involved because I am a firsthand recipient of the just joy and ease and comfort that this audience of ours can give to us. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I really have. And my mom has enjoyed listening to the show, and I've talked to her about a lot of my listeners that contact me. And, you know, it's almost as if she knew you, because I talked about you all the time. And she was proud of what I've done. She's proud of this show. She says, you know, you're speaking your voice. You're making a name for yourself. I'm proud of you. And I couldn't do it without any one of my listeners. I mean, this has been a long journey. This is, what, 2013, 2014 since I started this? And it started as a show called Mysteries of Michigan that I'd get 5 or 6 listeners a week for the longest time. And it's grown into the show that gets thousands of listeners a week. And I couldn't do it without you. And you need to give yourselves a pat on the back, because not only do you keep the show going, but the support that you've given me during the hardest time of my life has literally helped me through with this whole thing. This is the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. This was my mother. Again, she carried me. She nursed me. She nurtured me. She grew me into the person I am. And she's gone. And there's a huge, huge hole in my heart right now that you, my listeners, have helped fill, that has made it just that much easier. You don't know. Those of you who sent that, you might have think, oh, I'll just send a just obligatory, just my condolences. You don't know how much that means. When I get a listener that I've never met you in person, the only interaction we have is you're listening to me talk on this show. You don't know how much that means to me, that you take the time to say, hey, Tom, my condolences. I'm sorry about your mom. If there's anything I can do, let me know. You don't know how much that little phrase, those little words mean to somebody who is at rock bottom. It gives them hope. And without you guys, I don't know if I could do it. I've got brothers and sisters that are really struggling, and I owe it to you that have lifted me up and given me the support and given me the strength to carry on, because just the messages, your mother lives on, your mother's with you. Just those words stick with me. I really want to believe it. And the more you guys send that, the more you guys tell me that, the more I believe it. I could do this show for 1,000 years and I could never repay you enough. Thank you to all my listeners. You have helped me. I'm not saying I'm through it. I don't think I'll ever get through it, but you've helped me get through some of the hardest times of my life just by your words. And if I haven't got back with you and just said thank you, it's just because I don't have time. I this has been a trying week and a half for me. I have my moments. I'll be fine, and then all of a sudden I'm breaking down into tears. And I just don't have time to respond to everybody. I was overwhelmed. And again, that's a good thing. I don't want to make it sound like a bad thing. It's a good thing. But now I got to get back to my life, and I'm never going to forget my mother. I'm never going to forget the lesson she taught me, and I'm always going to have a place in my heart for her. But you know what she'd want me to do? Get back to my life. Get back to the Paranormal Patriot. So with that being said, thank you. Mom, I know you're listening. The show, we talked politics. I feel my mom was sitting right next to me going, yep, you're right. You're right. Thank you. Thank you so much for everything you have done and helped me through. I'm not going to name names because honestly, there's way, way too many names to list that helped me. You know who you are. You know who you are. So with that being said, I want to tell you right now, please contact the Paranormal Patriot Hotline. You know, my plans of having this grand show where I'm talking live and people call in, it's being pushed back because of everything that happened. My whole life has been pushed back. But that doesn't mean you can't contact me. Contact me at 989-607-4722. Again, 989-607-4722. Tell me what you think of the show. Tell me what you think is going on in this country, in the world. Tell me your paranormal experience. Tell me that you have a podcast, a book, or anything you want to promote on this show. Call me at this number, 989-607-4722. 989-607-4722. Leave a message. It will be played on this show. If you have a podcast, a book, or anything you want to promote that our listeners would love to hear, free. I'm not in this for the money, guys. If that were the case, I would have stopped long ago. Contact me. I'll promote it for you. No charge. Just to get you and your product or your book or your vision out there. 989-607-4722 or contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. That'll be the show for the day. Thank you for listening, and thank you, everybody. Thank you. You have been listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Velasquez. I'll be back next week. Yeah, I've had better days, but of high, steep falls. There's a reason why people love an underdog. Battles on one, they just show who you are. And in the end, you know I'm all good mine. Maybe not today.